Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is Tuesday. I'm Jen Wolf. That is Chris Candy. This is Nick Wright. Chris, you'll have to get used to the fact that I never, on any given day, know what day it is. So okay. Just wrap your head around that. And
I'm going to need you to tighten up, Jenna. Let's go. It's Tuesday. I need more energy.
Oh, more than this?
More energy. Let's go.
I'm going to have to stand up for that. We got a great show for you this morning. LeBron James has his team in first place for the first time in three seasons. Tom Brady now knows what Nick's known for a while now. Patriots are no longer unstoppable. But we're going to start this program off energetically, Chris Canny, with a little Monday Night Football. Cowboys in town to face the Giants, looking for their sixth straight win over Big Blue. Dak Prescott had a big hand in getting that done after throwing a pick on his first pass, rebounded by tossing three touchdowns. Zeke ran for a season-high 139 yards, and that defense got to Daniel Jones five times last night. Cowboys now sit atop the division at 5-3 with the win over the Giants. Here's quarterback Dak Prescott after the win.
We're a confident team. We're a team that even when we're fighting adversity, even when we're getting in our own way and struggling a little bit, we have confidence. We have faith in what we're going to do. We know what we're able to do. And tonight was another example of that.
So interesting. We spoke yesterday on the show about the Cowboys being one of those teams that you don't fully trust because you don't know what they're going to give you week in and week out. After what you saw last night, Nick, do you feel more or less confident in this team?
Well, I feel like you have to feel at least slightly more confident because we did see in this very building this Cowboys team lose to the worst of the two New York football teams in the New York Jets in a game that started not too terribly dissimilarly to how this one started, where the Cowboys are making mistakes, the other team's taking advantage, in a game you expect Dallas to be in full control of. All of a sudden, it's like, wait, they're not only trailing, they're down two scores. But from the moment Dallas went down 12-3, from the moment, and I know a lot of people probably make a bigger deal of this than I will, from the moment that black cat ran onto the field and paused the football game temporarily, the Cowboys were in full and utter control of this game. And most importantly, while I know if people didn't watch and you see the final score, you're like, oh, Cowboys damn near scored 40, you would think the offense was dominant. The offense was not dominant. Zeke was dominant. But that Cowboys pass rush and defense was exceptional. I understand the Giants are a unit that can be had up front, but after the Giants went up 12-3, what their offense did was three plays, 0 yards pick, six plays, 5 yards punt, three plays, 10 yards fumble, two long field goal drives, and then the final drive of the game of any substance where they ended up when Shermer gave up and punted the ball down 12 with 6 minutes left. So the Cowboys defense, led by that defensive line, stiffened. Zeke was outstanding. I don't think Dak was great, but he rallied from that first play of the game, which was as bad as a play could have gone, to start a football game. So I don't have much more confidence in them after this week's win, but because of the circumstances in which it came, down 12-3, thinking, are we going to lose to both New York teams this year? Mm-hmm. Are we going to have that on our resume? I thought the way they played the final 2.5 quarters showed some resiliency and some things they can build on, most notably Zeke continuing to be great and that D-line with the addition of Michael Bennett wreaking havoc throughout the evening.
Yeah, I don't give you points for showing resiliency when your offense decides that they're not going to show up for pretty much the entire first half, save the last 3 minutes of that second quarter. But in looking at this Cowboys team, team. I mean, you're absolutely right. The story of the night was the Dallas Cowboys defense. They got that red zone stop early after Dak Prescott inexplicably throws the ball to Antoine Bethea. You hold them to 3 points there. But, I mean, as far as the Dallas Cowboys offense is concerned, they could not have gotten off to a worse start. Two turnovers and a missed field goal in three of their first four possessions. That's just unacceptable. That's not what you expect from a championship caliber team.
Coming off of a bye week.
But what you do expect is for a defense that where they stood up when they had to. That red zone defense for the Dallas Cowboys, the Giants had five possessions inside the 10. The Cowboys defense only gave up one touchdown, that being a pass to Cody Latimer. So for me, the defense did show up. You saw the pass rush heat up. And ever since Robert Quinn got back, that Dallas Cowboys defensive pass rush has really turned it up a notch. They've had 20 sacks in the six games having Robert Quinn after having only two sacks in the games that he missed. So their pressure rate has been through the roof. So if that defense can continue to do what it's been doing, be good in the red zone, be able to rush the quarterback, and then that offense can control the line of scrimmage by being able to run the football, then I think those are things that the Cowboys can hang their hat on. But I'm still concerned about Dak Prescott in this passing game a little bit.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about. Sure, you can go in and have confidence in the defense that they're going to at least get you through games. But the question all preseason, waiting for Dak to get his contract, the beginning of the season, now we're at the midway point of the season, continues to be, is Dak Prescott your franchise quarterback? We know he's going to be there, and I'm sure he's going to get signed, but how good is he? We asked if you're more or less confident in the Cowboys. Are you more or less confident in Dak Prescott after what you saw?
I have been for the last 2 years. Not the first year of Dak, I was too high on him, but for the last few years, I've been very consistent. Dak is who he is, and that is an above-average NFL quarterback. Anyone trying to act like Dak Prescott sucks is lying. I also think anyone trying to act like Dak Prescott is one of the star quarterbacks of this league is lying. We have now plenty of evidence to show you games like yesterday are what we should expect. Games where he might make one mistake where you're like, really? Where there's going to be a lot of the dinking and dunking Dak that he was knocked for even in that great rookie year. But he can step up and deliver a strike as he did in the play, was it to Amari Cooper, the touchdown that essentially ended the football game?
The dagger route.
That was a great throw. And now he's running wide open, but that is a great throw with velocity, with timing, get the ball to Amari right where he needs it to be to get the optimum yards after catching the touchdown. But that is the question, Jenna, for the Cowboys this year, because we know who they're going to have to go through. They're going to have to go through Russ and Aaron and Drew. And if you're going to beat those guys, you're going to need not just an excellent defense, not just a great running game, but your quarterback, even if he can't play those guys to a draw, he's going to have to play them close to even. And that's the skepticism I have about the Cowboys, because the rest of the roster, when it's healthy, they might not have the depth, but when it's healthy, is as good as any roster in football. But Dak is the question mark, and I think we know the answer. He's good. Dak's a good quarterback, and I don't know if that's enough for the Cowboys to get to where they want to be this year.
And that's the question that they're going to have to eventually find out the answer to now in terms of whether or not Dak is going to be the guy. Jerry Jones has already said this is going to be our quarterback.
He is the guy.
And you know, when you look at the options in terms of replacing Dak Prescott, there really aren't any to speak of once we get to the offseason. So, I mean, this is your quarterback moving forward, but is he good enough to have you contending at a championship level? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, Nick, you brought up that last touchdown drive that they had, but what happens on that third and six if you don't get that DPI call on DeAndre Baker? Because that's a questionable call. What happens the drive before that if you don't have three New York Giants defensive penalties that aid that drive, and it was nine plays, 75 yards, but you had three critical penalties, two of which led to first down. So I look at this Cowboys offense and I say, I know what they're going to do in terms of the run game, because you have one of the best offensive lines in football and you have the best runner in football, Ezekiel Elliott, who averaged 6 yards a carry. I just don't know what you're going to get from Dak Prescott on a week-to-week basis. And when you up the degree of difficulty in terms of playing against better defenses, I don't know which version of Dak Prescott is going to show up.
And you mentioned the questionable DPI call, which was an enormous moment in the game, especially in conjunction with the fact that that it came right after a questionable DPI non-call that Pat Shurmur emotionally challenged. Probably a bad challenge, but obviously it was defensive pass interference. This play right here, not only was it game-changing potentially for the Giants, unfortunately, and Troy Aikman, our friend, tweeted about it, and I agree with him 100%. It's indicative of something we are seeing far too often on Sundays and Monday nights and Thursday nights, which is an absolute absence of any consistency on how the most crucial call in football, the only spot foul that you see called often in football, called defensive pass interference. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm beside myself that there was one obvious one that would have helped me that didn't get called, one very questionable one that kills me that does get called, and the only solace if you're a Giants fan is, you know what? Happens to a half dozen teams every week this year. I don't know what the issue is, but I know it's got to get fixed before we get to the postseason.
You can add that to a list of things that Giants fans are really upset about. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, here we go. A little Baltimore Ravens talk. You know something about this team, Chris King.
Just a little bit.
All season long, we wondered who would finally hand the Patriots their first loss. Turned out to be the Ravens. A big reason how that happened was quarterback Lamar Jackson. Baltimore's first-round pick last year, accounting for 3 touchdowns in a win over New England Sunday night, prompting his teammate, All-Pro safety Earl Thomas, to say, quote, "This man is the MVP." Nick, why do you think so many people missed on Lamar Jackson?
This is a complex question. And
well, let's figure out, first, to say why they missed. They missed because of how many great quarterbacks we thought were great quarterbacks went before him. He was the last quarterback taken in the first round.
Yeah, well, the last quarterback taken, despite having the best collegiate resume other than Baker. And he and Baker, you could have put head to head. They both won a Heisman. They both were prolific passers. And I say that intentionally. Lamar was a prolific passer in college, not just runner. Now, obviously, he was a spectacular runner, but he wasn't Mike Vick the year that he was in the Heisman discussion where he was almost exclusively a runner. He could do it all. And so why did they miss on Lamar? Well, I don't know. Why did Locker and Gabbard and Ponder go ahead of Cap? And I know Cap is a dirty word these days, but he was a great quarterback for a period of time in this league. Why did Osweiler and Whedon and Tannehill go over Russell Wilson? Why did Blake Bortles go over all the quarterbacks he went ahead of? Why did Mitch Trubisky go ahead of Deshaun Watson? And the answer to that question, why did Josh Allen and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold go ahead of Lamar Jackson? And the answer is a lot of things. One is, coaches are more comfortable sticking with their style than diversifying what they do. I don't know if Baltimore trades up to get him if they don't have Greg Roman there, the man who built the offense around Colin Kaepernick when Cap was so successful. I think additionally, there is a prototype quarterback that has to do with height, that has to do with arm talent, that occasionally for some has to do with race. And Lamar obviously doesn't check any of those boxes. And there was one other thing that happened in the lead up with the discussion about Lamar. This is why when I say it's nuanced, people would talk about his inability to effectively communicate. And I would wonder, to whom is he supposed to communicate? Because I don't think anyone has ever had a hard time understanding Lamar Jackson in the huddle. But that doesn't mean he's a great interview. That doesn't mean that when he's sitting down with executives, he can communicate coming out of Louisville as effectively as Daniel Jones could this year coming out of North Carolina, maybe in more comfortable situations for Daniel than Lamar, given his, not, I don't want to even say upbringing, but just given who he has talked to and the circumstances in which he's been in his whole life.
Yep.
So all those reasons to me made it to where he was considered the risky pick as opposed to put on the tape. You think that guy can make plays in the NFL? Because I do. And all those things worked against him, which is why the Ravens were able to steal him with the 32nd pick of the draft.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the presentation of Lamar Jackson. He's not going to be the guy that necessarily fits into the blue blazer crowd. Right. But Lamar Jackson is a guy that you can feel comfortable representing your organization. I go back to 2018 when he took over as a starter after their first 9 games. They were 4-5. And when the media asked Lamar Jackson, how does it feel now that this is your team? He said, it's not just my team, it's our team. But you can see when he has that kind of attitude, that endears him to his teammates, and you can see that they love him. And in the way that he plays on the field, it's a style that's not for everybody. Not every coach shares the same philosophy that John Harbaugh has. There was that belief that was out there that you can't win championships with a quarterback that's an athlete that takes off and runs. But what people have to understand is Lamar Jackson wants to be a pocket passer. There's a difference between an athlete playing a quarterback versus a quarterback that happens to be an athlete. Lamar Jackson is clearly the latter, and when you look at his numbers this year, he's a lot more effective when he's playing from the pocket than he is when he's throwing outside of the pocket. And I think he has 5 times the attempts throwing the football in the pocket than he does outside of the pocket. So I think that there are some misconceptions about who Lamar Jackson is and the kind of game that he wants to play.
And there's something to be said for how he spent his offseason. He wants to be a pocket passer. He spent this whole offseason really working on throwing the ball. He came flat out and said, I hate running. I don't want to run. He's poised. He's got humility as a young player. John Harbaugh said, I don't see him as young. He's wise beyond his years. But if I could play devil's advocate for a second, I think part of the reason he did drop is because he was basically playing 2 positions in college. And I think a lot of NFL teams were perhaps a little, I don't know, but apprehensive about bringing someone in who wasn't just a pure quarterback, even if he was a better runner in college than he was a thrower.
Right. But here, the only issue I have with that is, if we want to say he played 2 positions, he played them both at an A-plus level. Every year in this league, we have quarterbacks who don't even play their 1 position quarterback at a B-minus level that somehow find themselves as lock top 10 picks. I mean, the same draft as Lamar Jackson. Let's just remove running from the equation entirely. Let's show the number six pick of the draft compared to Lamar and what they did their last 2 years of college. That's Josh Allen, that's Lamar. Josh is playing at a small school in a nonsense conference. And Lamar has him crushed in everything. None of that. I mean, you do see the rushing yards there, but you can X that out. All the other passing numbers, he has him killed. Why is Josh Allen the safer pick? Because he's 6'5", because he has a rocket arm. And by the way, Josh Allen's best attributes are his legs right now as well, but we don't assign that to him. The same Mitch Trubisky, there was no argument for Mitch Trubisky to go ahead of Deshaun Watson. There was none. But the Bears so desperately needed Trubisky, I'm not even including Mahomes, because I think that would be revisionist history.
Yeah, that's an outlier. Yeah.
I didn't see Mahomes coming. I don't think a lot of people saw Mahomes coming. But Deshaun, we saw him. We saw what he
lighted
did
up
in college football against the best competition. Why was Trubisky considered the safer pick? Because it is almost as if you get downgraded if you can do things with your legs. And there is the element of prototype quarterback, face of the franchise, and what do those things actually mean, and what are we actually saying? I don't think Kyler would have gone number one if Baker hadn't had the success he had.
Yeah.
I think Baker from that system, that size, all of a sudden broke some boundaries for Kyler. And I don't know if Lamar would have been a first round pick if not for the success Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick had had. So hopefully Lamar opened some doors for other guys. But ultimately, guys, I think teams overthought it. it. I think they saw Lamar Jackson, and instead of looking for reasons he could do it, they were looking for reasons he couldn't. And with Josh Allen and others, it was, well, let's make the case as to why he can, rather than put on the tape and see why he can't.
Well, I think there's something to what you're talking about with quarterbacks that have had recent success coming out of spread systems in college. Bill Parcells, who was the coach that drafted me when I came into the league for the Dallas Cowboys, he told me that he wasn't draft players that don't remind him of somebody that he's had success with.
Yep.
And a lot of NFL coaches abide by that rule. And there aren't a lot of quarterbacks that have looked like Lamar Jackson in the last 25 years in the NFL. So, I mean, it is going out on a limb to take a chance on a guy like Lamar Jackson that happens to be the athlete that he is, because the tendency for young quarterbacks while they're learning is to trust their legs more than they trust their arm. And then the questions for Lamar Jackson coming out of college is, how accurate is he? I mean, in college, you're talking about throwing in the windows where guys have 5 yards of separation. Yep. If you got a yard of separation in the NFL, that's considered open. Can Lamar Jackson routinely make those throws? Now, we didn't see him make those throws on a consistent basis in his rookie year, but he's starting to make those throws now going into his second year. So I think there's something to be said for the kid's motivation in order to improve his game and hone his craft. But that's only something that you learn when you sit down with the kid in the interview room. The only problem is a lot of talent evaluators in the NFL weren't willing to give him that opportunity.
Accuracy, strength, confidence, and he's won at every level, and he's continued to do it now for the Baltimore Ravens. All right, the Lakers are now sitting atop the Western Conference. Great news for Chris Canty, who we found out is a Laker fan, even though he's not from California. LeBron James is a big reason why, posting triple-doubles in back-to-back games and leading the NBA in assists. After Friday night's game, LeBron hopped on the gram, posted this: "My drive and passion will outweigh your hate. Nothing you can do to stop me. You only help me. Hashtag revenge season. Hashtag the kid from Akron." He's big mad, Nick. Big mad.
Yeah.
What? Nick, can a re-energized LeBron lead the Lakers to an NBA title?
Yeah, he can. Looks like he will. Looks, you know what your 17 LeBron looks like? Your 14 LeBron.
Mm.
Or your 11 LeBron. Or your 7 LeBron. Or basically the LeBron James we've gotten every single year after his rookie season.
Yeah.
Rookie season comes in, he's a 21-5-5 guy. And since then, despite oddly never actually having a 27-7-7 game in his whole career, he's given you 27-7-7 year in, year out. This year, he's doing it a little differently. One less point, one more rebound, four more assists, 26-8-11. He's playing out of position, but that out of position is allowing him to lead the NBA in assists by a wide margin. He right now is, if you care about the nerdy defensive stats, he's a top three defensive player in the league so far this year. And it turns out, for the first time in a decade, not having a 100-game season, we saw no teams had gone to four straight finals until recently when the Heat did it, the Cavs did it, the Warriors did it, obviously. The Warriors amazingly went to five straight, and now the entire team is injured. Mm. Everyone that's a part of it.
There's no one left right now because
bodies are not built to play five consecutive 100-game seasons. LeBron played eight consecutive, and then his groin gave out on him, and last year was a lost season. And then he got some rest, got some rejuvenation, spent some time, it would appear, on a very nice boat in the south of France. And he came back and reminded everybody, hey, that best player in the world title, it still goes through me. And with him playing like this, Canty, and Anthony Davis being Anthony Davis, and the Lakers actually having a living, breathing NBA head coach, I don't know if Frank Vogel's great, but he sure as hell ain't Luke Walton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the best team in the NBA right now.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you talked about LeBron James and that injury that he had last year. That was probably the best thing for his career, knowing that he's getting a little bit older. The fact that he was able to get some rest this past offseason, not having an extended playoff run, he can come back this year and be rejuvenated. But I go back to something that Nick noticed at the beginning of last season about LeBron's game. And he said LeBron didn't look as engaged defensively. It looks completely different this season in terms of his engagement on the defensive end. All you got to do is go back to that Mavs game on Friday and look at how he played in the final minutes of that game in the fourth quarter and in overtime. He took over that game, but it was started with his defense. The fact that he set the tone for that team and that they've embraced defense as being the identity for them, I think that's going to bode well for them, because at the end of it, I think it will be the Lakers and the Clippers. We know the Clippers can play lockdown defense, but I think that this LeBron James, if we get this version of him the entire season, especially on the defensive end, I think this Lakers team is right there. And ultimately, when you look at the star power, I trust LeBron James and Anthony Davis a little bit more than I trust Kawhi Leonard and Paul George.
But Nick, this is almost like LeBron, I don't want to say 2.0, it's like 7.0, if you will. He leads the league in assists, so he's obviously just altered his game a little bit. Yep. He's playing defense for the first time in a long time, and he's actually enjoying playing with the people around him. Just talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think the defense point, the team right now, they're the number one defense in basketball. They have the number one defensive rating. They're number one in opponent field goal percentage. They're second in opponent threes, and so and that's where Vogel gets credit, because that is what he was known for in Indiana. Didn't work out for him in Orlando, but that's where Vogel gets credit, and it helps when you have Anthony Davis on the inside and LeBron out on the perimeter. But where LeBron made a point after the game, I think it was Friday night against the Mavs, where he was asked about his defense, and he said, here's what's never happened to me my whole career. No one's ever singled me out defensively, meaning they don't hunt him the way Steph would get hunted. Like, oh, let me get LeBron on a switch. Where his on-ball defense has always been exceptional. Where it lagged last year and where it lagged in the regular season the last few years with the Cavs was his off-ball defense was lackadaisical, was at times he almost seemed like he wasn't paying full attention on the court, which is very not like what we're used to LeBron first decade of his career. This year, I think to set the tone for the team, it has been the opposite. His off-ball defense has been exceptional. He's always making the right switch. He's always getting to the right place. The offense, he will always be an A-plus offensive player, because even right now when his shot's not falling, he's the best passer in basketball, and he's got Anthony Davis as a cheat code to dump the ball down to. So the Lakers right now have a league average offense. That'll get better. If they can be a top five defense, and right now they're the number one defense, they will not only be the best team in basketball, they will clearly be the best team in basketball, because to your point, that's where the Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge.
Yes.
The Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge defensively, expecting the Lakers would have an edge offensively. Up to this point in the season, that has not been the case.
No, it hasn't been the case, and LeBron James told us coming into this season, a lot of people been playing with the throne.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be back with a vengeance. Guess what? He's back.
I like it. He's still the best player in the league. It's only been 14 straight years.
All right, let's move on back to some football. Oh, to be a fly on the wall of any room at Gillette Stadium yesterday, as the Patriots had to first sit down and start watching film from their terrible loss to the Ravens. How terrible? Well, before they knew it, they were trailing 17-0. Brady knows that his team has a lot of room for improvement, especially on the offensive side, where they're ranked 15th in yards per game. All right, Chris Canty, let me ask you this, and I'm not going to be dramatic when I ask you, but after what you saw on Sunday night, after what you've been seeing leading up to Sunday night, should the Patriots still be the favorites in the AFC?
Yeah, they should be the favorites. They've gone to 8 straight AFC championship games, so until otherwise notice, I'm going to bet on Tom Brady and Bill Belichick being able to find a way, especially knowing that they have a pretty good defense. Now, I do believe that that defense ran into a bad matchup in the Baltimore Ravens, but by and large, I think that defense is closer to what we've seen in the first 8 games of the season as opposed to what we saw on Sunday night. Now, what Brady's talking about with their approach, he's absolutely right. They do have things that they have to work on, and they don't count their wins before they go out there and play the game. And he actually went on to say in that interview that when you win, everything is great, but that's not really the case. That's what everybody outside of the organization is saying, just because winning is the ultimate deodorant. But Tom Brady and that group, they know that when they win, there are still things that they have to work on. There are still things that they need to improve. And that's from their head coach, Bill Belichick, who constantly preaches improvement to his team. Everybody do their job. We heard Bill Belichick after the game talk about, yeah, we didn't do enough to deserve an opportunity to win that football game. This is a team that's always going to be focused on improvement. And if you focus on the process rather than the result, at the end of it, you're going to like where you end up.
with respect, I agree with the end of that. I totally disagree with the beginning that they should still be the favorite because of what they've done over the last decade. What they've done this season is right now they look like the third best team in the conference. And they are great at dominating inferior competition. Great. No team is better over the last 20 years at not beating itself, at letting the other team beat themselves before you even have to do anything. All of it. But in the playoffs, you got to beat real teams. And Baltimore this year has beaten Seattle and New England. Kansas City this year has beaten Baltimore and beaten Minnesota. Beat Minnesota with their backup quarterback. New England's best win is Buffalo. New England, I need to see them beat the type of teams they are going to have to beat to make it to their fourth straight Super Bowl in order to believe it. And right now, we know they don't have faith in their special teams. They don't have faith in their special teams coverage, but by special teams, let me rephrase it. They don't have faith in their kicker. They have had 25 uninterrupted years of Hall of Fame kickers. Vinatieri to Gostkowski with, I think, a dozen games missed in total over that quarter century. Now they're on their third kicker this year. They're on, is it Nick Folk now? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he'll make it to the end of the year. Hell, if Vinatieri gets cut by the Colts, maybe they'll bring his senior citizen self back. Brady's right about their offense. The numbers are right. The every number other than points per game, which is inflated because of the defense, says this is an average offense. And the eye test says this is an average offense. But the most concerning thing to me, Canny, from the Ravens game is that defense that I have been saying, well, not I've been saying, the numbers have been saying, was historically great through eight games, was getting gashed repeatedly. And that, to me, does raise some questions. How much of the defense was a product of playing a bunch of learning, if not incompetent, NFL quarterbacks? So if Baltimore were to play them on a neutral field, I would favor Baltimore. If Kansas City, especially now that Chris Jones is back and the defense looks different, if they have a healthy Patrick Mahomes and they were to play them on a neutral field, I would favor Kansas City. The Patriots obviously can get there, but to me, they're not the favorites in the AFC anymore.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not giving the Patriots some lifetime achievement award based on what they've accomplished. I'm just saying, based on the history, I know the mentality and how they're going to approach the season, particularly the second half of the season. Now, last year at the end of the season, they had a couple of bad losses. They lost on the road to Miami. They lost to Pittsburgh in a game where they only scored 10 points. Mm-hmm. And everybody wanted to leave the Patriots for dead and said that offense couldn't figure it out. And guess what happened? Bill Belichick and Tom Brady figured it out. They morphed into an offense that had two backs in the backfield, ran a lot of lead plays. They led with the ground game, and that ended up propelling them to a championship. I'm looking at this from the standpoint of Bill Belichick is still trying to figure out what his offense does well, what they don't do well, and then try to major in the things that his team is strong at. They still don't have an identity on that side of the ball. But what has saved them thus far this season has been the defense and the level that they've played at. Now, every offense is not going to have what the Baltimore Ravens offense has in Lamar Jackson. So that's to their benefit. The Patriots still have the number one seed in the AFC. All right, so they still have an opportunity. They still play in the AFC East.
Yes.
So there's very little competition. I mean, you see Buffalo, they'll probably be a wild card team, but we don't think Buffalo is going to threaten for the division. So this Patriots team still has time to figure it out. And then, oh, by the way, we'll see what happens as they continue to get healthier.
And, by the way, I want to make this clear. I still think they'll be the one seed.
Okay.
I think even if they lose 3 out of 5 of this five-game stretch, as I said last week, I think they will. I don't think anyone gets to better than 13 wins in the AFC. So I still think they're the one seed. I think they can be had at Gillette this year. I think this is the worst Pats offense we've seen since the Matt Castle year, since the year Tom Brady was not the quarterback.
Back here, First Things First. We're now joined by senior Yahoo Sports NBA writer Vincent Goodwill. Welcome to the show, Vincent.
Good morning,
it's great
good morning,
to see
man.
You.
Glad to see Nick's hair, mate. Glad to see
Nick's hair. He grew it in the offseason. In your offseason, he grew
some
hair.
Last time I saw it, my hair was your length, and now it's grown out. Good to see you.
And you were just starting to grow up, but the product hadn't hit in yet.
The product?
The product, yeah.
There ain't no product in this hair, man. Come
I don't
on,
get what that means, but it's real hair having sit next to him.
Once it's on your head, it's real.
Wow. Shaved. I mean, with this painted on hairline.
All right, Vincent.
Unbelievable.
Here we go.
Playing no games.
James Harden put up 44 points last night in a Rockets win over Memphis. That win following a 29-point blowout loss to Miami on Sunday. Harden leads the NBA with 36.6 points per game. One of the questions coming into this NBA season was about how Harden and Russ would fit together. While Russ didn't play last night, the two seemed to be making it work. Here's their head coach, Mike D'Antoni, after the game on his team's energy in last night's win.
Better. I mean, we're better than this. And we got a lot of higher aspirations in the way we're playing right now. And we're not playing very good. And that's just my line. It's not good enough. But, you know, I know our guys, and our guys will rally and they'll get it together, but it needs to be done sooner than later.
All right, Vincent, well, this seems to be the question. Will these two be able to get along on the court to get this team into title contention candidacy, if you will? What do you think about what you've seen so far this season?
I think they're going to get along because they're both invested in each other. They're both friends. They both have a genuine relationship. I don't think it's going to matter, though. I think as long as the Lakers and Clippers are healthy and playing the type of basketball that we think they're capable of playing, that's the ceiling of the Western Conference. I think Houston, sometimes we just have teams that missed their time, whether it's from a talent standpoint, a timing standpoint. I think their best chance was last year when Kevin Durant got hurt after game five?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Golden State. We weren't sure exactly how severe the injury was. They lost that game when that game was tied. They lost game six at home, and I think that closed the door. Sometimes these windows are very finite, and I don't consider the Rockets being a team. And I know you're a member of Rockets Hive, so.
That's not true.
I know, you're LeBron Hive first and foremost. There we go.
Wow.
But I don't see them being one of the four teams, because I think there's only maybe four or five legitimate teams every year that can win a title. I don't see Houston being one of those four teams.
So here's why I disagree with the end. The beginning, by the way, you could argue the Rockets missed their window the last two years.
Yeah.
Up 3-2.
Closeout game.
Yeah.
They shot, 5 of 44 from three?
Missed 27 straight threes.
The one seed, that was the 1 year since D'Antoni's been there. They've had an excellent defense go along with the offense. Chris Paul pops his hammy, and, you know, the Warriors go on to repeat when that Rockets team all year long was the team that I think everyone thought could give the Warriors the most trouble. We knew the Cavs with LeBron and Jeff Green were not going to be able to contend with them in those NBA finals. Then last year, they get the KD injury. Here's why I think the Rockets are going to be in position to do better than they did last year. I still think they're going to be the one seed in the West. I think this is a team that is going to have an unstoppable offense. Mm. Now, the offense right now is fifth in basketball, and that's with Harden shooting a horrific rate from three. He's still getting his 36 a night because evidently that's the new normal for James Harden, but he's doing it thanks to getting 16 free throws, up from 11 per game last year, and that because his three is simply not falling. They're officiating him a little bit differently. It seems to have affected him somewhat, so he's got to get his offense going. I think, and I'd say offense going, he's averaging 36, but his efficiency going. I think Westbrook has been extraordinary. I think Westbrook, we said, how are they going to change? Well, Harden didn't change at all. Russ has adjusted to him, and Russ has filled in some of the blanks. I think Russ is such an upgrade over Chris Paul that you're going to see that throughout the course of the regular season. Now, I don't think they're as good as the Lakers. Everyone in the world, except for me, it would seem, is assigning the Clippers a level of greatness that I'm not comfortable with yet. Like you said, we got to see what we think the Clippers' ceiling is. We haven't seen the Clippers play a game with Paul George yet. We've seen them lose a couple games without him, but we haven't seen them play a game with Paul George yet. I think the Rockets can be the one seed. I think they can get to the Western Conference Finals. I don't think they have a matchup for LeBron and Anthony Davis, and I don't think they will have a defense that is good enough to win four consecutive rounds in the postseason, which is what they would have to do. But I think right now, to not have them in the conversation, Milwaukee, Philly, Lakers, Rockets, Clippers, if you want those to be the five, I'm fine with it. But to cross the Rockets out and not have them amongst those other four, to me, is unfair to what having the best backcourt in basketball by a wide margin, the value that that provides.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think the Rockets are a true title contender, but I agree with you. In the Western Conference, they'll be a top three or four seed just based on how they play. They rely on the analytics. They play with pace. I think they're second in the NBA in pace right now.
Which is a change.
And they're third in forced turnovers. So, I mean, this team is going to get up and down the court. And to your earlier point about Chris Paul, I think Russell Westbrook is capable of playing with a lot more tempo than an offense with CP3 and James Harden is capable of doing. So when he comes back healthy, I think that this team offensively is going to be a juggernaut in the regular season. And it's going to be a regular season where they feast on the bottom dwellers in the Western Conference, Eastern Conference teams, all of those things. My concern for the Rockets is when they get to the postseason and they're in a seven-game series against teams that are actually decent clubs. What are they going to do once they get there? That's the biggest question for me. At some point, you have to be able to stop somebody defensively. Mm-hmm. Right now, opposing teams are shooting 49% from the field against the Rockets. That ain't going to get it done when you're trying to win a championship.
That was my question. Are you guys worried about their defense where it is right now?
You're always worried about their defense. Like, let's just take the South Beach flu from Sunday out of it. They spent a Saturday night in Miami. Like, that's just a schedule loss. You know, you're down by 40 points in the middle of the second quarter. Like, you just call that what it is. But Harden has improved as a defender, as at least being a willing defender. Mm. Russell Westbrook is going to try to get every rebound to get up and down the floor. But from a schematic standpoint, I don't trust them. Tyson Chandler may be getting them 2 or 3 years too late. Clint Capella is still the same player with the same holes that he had. Mm. And P.J. Tucker can't guard everybody on the wings. This is a wing league. And let's say you play the Clippers in the playoff series. Okay, he can guard Kawhi Leonard, but who's going to guard Paul George? Mm-hmm. And Mike D'Antoni, you've seen this. I trust people who've done this before. James Harden is shooting 25% from three, and so is Russ. One of those percentages is going to stay the same. And I don't know if they have enough defense and enough shooting, because Eric Gordon hasn't shown up yet this season, for me to say they're going to be a serious contender. Whether they win 60 games, 55 games, whatever the case may be, you've got to show me a team that they're better than for 7 games defensively, Nick.
Well, hold on. No, they don't have to be better than the team defensively if the offense is so much better. Now, they have to be better than 28th in the league defensively. They can't be. You can't be a bottom five defense in basketball and compete for a championship. In fact, historically, aside from Shaq's Lakers, you had to be a top 10 defense to compete for a championship.
That Cleveland team that won a champion or got to the finals a couple years ago was bottom 10, but that was, in your opinion, the best player of all time.
You have the best player of all time, and then they got crushed in the finals. But you know what I mean?
Allegedly.
But you're not talking about the year they won the title.
Yeah,
you're talking about they end up getting crushed in the finals, in part because the defense couldn't show up. But sometimes we do overthink things. And here's where I'm at on this. The last few years, the Rockets have been unable to get through one team, Golden State. Mm. That team doesn't exist anymore. Additionally, they are better than they were the last few years because Russell Westbrook is better than Chris Paul. At this point in his career, Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. The last couple years of his career, Chris Paul. Not vintage New Orleans Pelicans.
Are we sure that the bill on Russell Westbrook's knees and that surgery that he's having, that those he think he had 3 surgeries in the span of 9 months and he's in his 11th year. At some point, though, that bill becomes due.
Yeah,
but I will say this, Russell Westbrook can play a lot faster right now than Chris Paul is capable of playing.
Okay, I agree with that, but in playoff basketball, and I think in a regular season that can work, but in the playoffs, even though Chris Paul has had his struggles, he still played with a certain amount of control. And when you're playing that position of point guard, you're handling the ball, and you have to value your possessions late in games, we know LeBron is going to value those possessions. We know that Kawhi Leonard has evolved into a playmaker. He's going to value those possessions. Is Russell Westbrook and his style of play going to value possessions combined with their defense enough for you to say, I trust them to beat those two teams? They're a second round team. I don't know if they're a conference finals team.
I just, the reason, so we're all in agreement on the Lakers, but the reason everyone's just assigning the Clippers a level of greatness I don't see yet. Kawhi has been sensational in the fourth quarter when he's not taking games off. And he's been, now, by the way, if people care about these things, it's shocking how this happens. Kawhi, because he has taken on a playmaker role, because he does have to be that team's offense, his defense is not what it once was. By the way, that's how it works for everybody. Once you have to give full effort on the offensive end, your defense lags a little bit. Everyone just says, oh, Kawhi and Paul George are going to fit together seamlessly. That team's going to be awesome. Paul George had surgery on both shoulders.
Haven't
Who did
seen
that
it
ever
yet.
Hurt? Let me just see it. Let me see them be. We've seen the Lakers now. They're awesome. We know the Rockets offense can score 160 in a game. We know what Milwaukee and Philly is. Let me just see the Clippers.
The Lakers have holes too. How can you ascribe when their guard play, when point guard play, and LeBron can't play point guard for an extended stretch of time. And LeBron will be 35, and as someone who's turning 35 in a month or so, you feel it.
Yeah, I don't think LeBron's aging the way you and I are. Going.
I didn't say you.
We gotta take
you.
A break.
Yeah, I was right there with you until you said that.
Back here, First Things First, now joined by yet more personality, former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott.
313 heavy up in this thing.
What's happening, homie?
What?
313 is heavy in here. Detroit. Vincent's from Detroit.
Vince from Detroit. Yep. He's from Detroit.
Meet me at the Murder Bear. That's an inside Detroit joke.
Nobody we got you,
okay, yeah.
Here we go. You ready?
Let's do it.
Lamar Jackson now tied with Russell Wilson, Bart Scott, for the best odds to win MVP. That according to our guys at Fox Bet. That after Lamar's performance against the Patriots. This is the same Lamar Jackson who was taken with the last pick of the first round in 2018. Bart, why do you think so many people missed on Lamar?
I mean, the reality of it is because he's a black athletic quarterback. And we've seen this story before, whether it was Pat White, whether it was Randall Well, whether it was Hines Ward. Sometimes people, you lack vision. And organizations like the Baltimore Ravens has never been that way. Because if you take a player like Lamar Jackson, you have to have your whole organization commit to him and commit to a style that maybe you haven't seen. And understanding that, you know, this is a guy that's an athletic player, what is the first thing they ask when he went to the combine? Can you work out a receiver? And he refused. Because, you know, it's offensive, and it should be offensive to a quarterback that won the Heisman to be asked to change his position. Right, it happened later in Tim Tebow's career after he got the opportunity to play the position that he's thrived at his entire life.
For three different teams, mm-hmm. got the opportunity.
Right, right. And, you know, you look at Lamar Jackson, they've never seen him before. So you're wondering, can he stay healthy? Right? Sometimes you have to have vision to see that this is a one-on-one. This is a guy who his completion percentage was good in college. He was good enough to win the Heisman. He played in a pro-style offense. You know, 59%, average 57% completion rate, you know, his entire college career. And, you know, kudos to Ozzie Newsome. And, you know, for having vision to say, hey, this guy is a talented football player and, you know, you never turn your back on talent. We saw the same thing with Cam Newton. When Cam Newton came in the league, they had to have an offense that was catered to his skill set. And Lamar Jackson is a scheme, you know, he's a scheme quarterback. Not all quarterbacks can thrive in every scheme. You mm-hmm. know, the only the great ones is can thrive in different types of offenses and defenses. You know, you probably was a defensive tackle in the 3-4-5 technique, you know, tackle in a 4-3, but, you know, it's different things. Certain linebackers couldn't mm-hmm. thrive. You saw Jonathan Vilma ask the Jets when they moved to a 3-4 because he couldn't deal with guards in his face. So I think that's the biggest thing. But, you know, this kid is a kid that's mature. He's been able to be coached up, and he's humble. And I think that's the personalities and intangibles that you always miss on when you miss on a talent. You have to go back and look at your scouting report and figure out why.
Bart, I think you're hitting the nail on the head when you talk about the organization committing to a certain style and being willing to work with Lamar Jackson and the strengths that he has as opposed to focusing on the weaknesses. I think that's the thing that NFL teams do far too much when you go through the pre-draft evaluation process. We want to define holes in Lamar Jackson's game. You had a respected talent evaluator said that he needs to move to receiver. That was his only chance of being a productive NFL player when he showed you he was a prolific quarterback in college. It just took the right team and it took the right vision in order to bring out the best in Lamar Jackson, which is what we're seeing now. Like, a lot of people want to focus on the threat that he has in the run game, but not a lot of people are focusing on the evolution of Lamar Jackson as a passer. When they had the broadcast on Sunday night during the game, they showed the graphic where Lamar Jackson has 179 attempts throwing the football from the pocket as opposed to 29 attempts outside of the pocket. Yeah, Lamar Jackson can run, but Lamar Jackson is not looking to run. He's a quarterback that happens to be an athlete, not the other way around. And I think that's what people need to realize about this kid, and that's why he's catapulted into the MVP conversation. John Harbaugh and Greg Roman, their staff, has done a great job of building an offense around him, building that run game out, but also allowing Lamar Jackson to have opportunities in the passing game with throws that he's comfortable with. A lot of them intermediate to deep throws in the middle of the field, utilizing those three tight end sets, making sure that Lamar Jackson is put in a position where he can do what he does best. And that's why the Baltimore Ravens are having success, and that's why they pulled up the upset against the Patriots.
And I want to elaborate on the first point you made, which is there you can't have this conversation honestly if you're afraid to touch on the racial component of it. Right. And I know some people get more offended by the discussion of racism than actual racism, so for those people it's going to bother them for a moment, but we'll deal with it. That, of course, in the NFL in 2019, black quarterbacks are given a more fair shake than they ever have.
Yep.
That is undeniable.
Yes.
But sometimes, just because things have gotten better, doesn't mean things are fixed. And the proof is in the results. Right now, there is a market inefficiency on draft status of black quarterbacks and effectiveness of said quarterbacks. Russell Wilson was available in the third round. Colin Kaepernick was available after Locker, Gabbard, and Ponder all went. Lamar was available after four other quarterbacks went in the first round. Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were available after Mitch Trubisky went. Now, there are a lot of obviously great white quarterbacks in the league. You know where the ones drafted in the last 10 years almost all went in the draft? Top five.
Mm-hmm.
Those quarterbacks, if you have any chance, go grab them. You can find value right on the overlooked black quarterback still.
Dak Prescott.
I didn't even mention him. Dak Prescott's available in the fourth round. Now, we've moved forward because you mentioned that Lamar, even though he won the Heisman, was asked to change position. Charlie Ward won the Heisman, was told, change sports. You got to go play basketball. So we are moving in the right direction. But you look around the league. Right now, who's your league MVP candidates? There's Rodgers, of course. He's played great. Who are the other ones? Deshaun Watson?
Mm-hmm.
Had a mediocre white dude taken ahead of him. Patrick Mahomes, before he got hurt, same mediocre white dude taken ahead of him. Lamar had four guys taken ahead of him. Hell, the one other MVP candidate is a guy who dealt with this in a different way. Christian McCaffrey, who people doubted him as a running back.
Mm-hmm. And I stood on the table for that, too.
Because he's a white running back, and you're like, hey, is he going to be athletic enough, even though we saw him? Hell, we saw his daddy be a great football player. Yeah. So this is an element of it. And one last point, just quickly. I want to make this clear. I don't think Lamar's a finished product.
Mm-mm.
I don't think Lamar is a sure 10-year superstar. But the idea that people doubted whether or not he could even comprehend a playbook, communicate in and out of the huddle, those are dog whistles
that
we've heard for a long time. And Lamar, to his credit, dealt with all of it, has dealt with it with grace and dignity, and turned into a star in this league.
Poise, confidence, humility. He's been wonderful. He spent the offseason really working on himself. And I agree with you 100% with everyone else. But you just have to factor in a little bit that one of the issues with Lamar was that he did play a little wide receiver, and he wasn't just a pure pocket passer.
Well, we've all played other positions growing up. I played tailback. I'm sure Chris is probably a tight end.
But, I mean, he really could have played. I mean, a lot of coaches were looking at him as playing wide receiver in the NFL when he did come out. And maybe that could have. You're right. But
I mean, it's just what happens,
Cordell.
But he should get the opportunity to play the position that he desires and that he's thrived at and been successful with. And, you know, you look at Greg Roman, he's done this before. He's the common denominator, right? And they built this offense around because he built the offense for Colin Kaepernick. And so the problem that we have in just society in general, we have to put people in categories. And you can't just put people in a box because nobody's one of everything. And people can evolve and grow into the position as well.
And I think the takeaway is what you said is that coaches are starting to scheme for quarterbacks coming out of college as opposed to trying to fit them into their already established system. And all that's going to do is lead to us opening the door for more quarterbacks like Lamar.
It's what good coaching is.
Yep.
Taking the unmolded clay and saying, how can we make it the best version of himself rather than the best version of what I'm familiar with.
Shout out to Randall Cunningham because I think he paved the way. Michael Vick set us back a little bit because he was an athlete that never evolved because he didn't put the work in.
Doug Williams, man.
Doug Williams. All right, I'm just going. He wasn't athletic,
Doug. We got to take a break.
That dude.
Chris Kenny, who's more important to the Cowboys' success, Zeke or Dak Prescott?
I would usually lean toward the best player or the better player in this instance, but I got to go with Dak Prescott because he's the quarterback. He touches the ball on every single offensive snap, so thereby I think he can have the most impact in terms of their team competing and trying to win a title, which is the ultimate goal. But in looking at what the Dallas Cowboys did last night offensively, I don't think you should have any concern about the running game. I mean, the running game was dominant. I mean, I was watching Ezekiel Elliott get 2-3 yards past the line of scrimmage before first contact. If that happens, then that means that Zeke is getting up on your safety or up on a defensive back and one-on-one in open space. Good luck trying to consistently tackle that guy.
Tell me if you agree. When that offensive line's healthy, they have the best running attack in football.
No question about it. I don't think you can even debate that. When that offensive line is healthy, that is the best running game in football. Now, it's a win because we're talking about a lot of those guys being on the back nine in terms of where they're at in their careers. But they're still really, really good. The only question is, can the quarterback come to the party consistently? And based on what we saw for the first half from Dak Prescott, I mean, it was ugly. It was ugly, Jenna. There was no other way to frame it. I mean, until the black cat crossed the field, I mean, it was all bad for Dak Prescott. I mean, the first play of the game, he throws the ball to Antoine Bethea. Antoine Bethea don't play for the Cowboys, he plays for the Giants. So, I mean, it's a situation where there are some decisions that you cannot explain that Dak Prescott makes, and you see it way too often. So, I'm just looking for this team to put it all together against a quality opponent. To this point in this season, they haven't done that.
Zeke's the most important player to the Cowboys being in the playoff picture. Dak is the most important player to them having any chance of success once in the postseason. If Zeke weren't there, this Cowboys offense would be a bottom 10 offense in football, to my eye. I don't think they're good enough in the passing game to overcome if they just had replacement level running back play, even with the outstanding offensive line. So Zeke can get you to the party, but who's going to take you home? It has to be Dak. So I agree with you. Like, the question mark for the Cowboys has, and the reason, it's not just because of the star on their helmet and their most discussed team. The reason we spend so much time talking about Dak is his level of play has as much of an impact on a team's ability to either win the Super Bowl or miss the playoffs outright as any player in the league. The Cowboys' defense is good and appears to only be getting better. You mentioned since Robert Quinn came back how much better the defensive line has been, and Michael Bennett, couple penalties notwithstanding, his impact was felt instantly. Tank Lawrence playing like he's finally over that off-season shoulder surgery. Byron Jones, after a rough very beginning of the season, has played a lot better. Yesterday, they didn't have Leighton Vander Esch. Didn't matter. Old man Sean Lee dusted off, played a few snaps. He didn't play great, but they have enough depth there along with Jalen Smith. We know what Zeke can be. We know what the offensive line can be when healthy. The wide receiving core is good, if not elite, but good with Cooper and Cobb. I don't care about Witten. It's about Dak. If Dak can play the best quarterbacks in football, not to a draw, but if he can give you 80% of what Breeze or Rodgers or Wilson are going to give you in a playoff game, then the Cowboys can beat those teams. By the way, that's what happened in the playoff game last year. Mm-hmm. The Seahawks had the handcuffs on Russell. He wasn't able to do that much. Dak played him close to a draw, and the rest of the Cowboys were flatly better than the rest of the Seahawks. That's the question for the Cowboys. So he's the most important guy. Zeke doesn't have to take a leap. Dak's the one that has to take a leap to get to the level we're talking
about. But you answered it before perfectly. We know the answer to Dak. We keep trying to change the question, but we know the answer, and the answer is it's because we don't know the answer. The fact that we keep asking who is Dak Prescott, now this far into his career, we all sort of know it. I mean, he hasn't been signed to his long contract yet, but he will, and he probably will always be that. But it's interesting that we've spent so much offseason, so much preseason talking about Zeke and Cabo and will he sign and what an integral part he is to this offense and how this offense will only succeed if he's back there. And he's back there, and we haven't really talked about him at all this season. He's quietly putting together Zeke-type numbers. Why do you think that is?
Well, he's doing what he always does. When Zeke plays the entire regular season, he's going to lead the league in rushing. That's who Ezekiel Elliott has been since he came into the league. But as far as the Dallas Cowboys are concerned, they paid Zeke $90 million for a reason. They paid him that money because they think they're right there in terms of being able to win a title. You don't give a running back $90 million in today's NFL if you don't think you're going to get some kind of return on that investment. You're talking about the position that probably has the shortest shelf life of any position in the league. So, yeah, the Dallas Cowboys believe they can get it done, but it all depends on what Dak Prescott is bringing to the table.
And they're about to pay
him,
too.
And to your point, Jenna, if you keep having to ask the question about whether or not you got a quarterback, then the answer is probably that you don't have a quarterback that's capable of competing at a championship level. But Dak Prescott is going to be the starting quarterback because you don't have any alternative. The hope for Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett is that Dak Prescott in year four can grow and be better than Dak Prescott has been in his first 3 years of his career. And it's not crazy to think that because he's getting more experience. He should be able to have more answers in terms of what defenses are trying to do to neutralize him. They're thinking that he's going to continue to improve as a player. The only question is that improvement going to come quick enough where the Dallas Cowboys can capitalize on the window that they have right now?
Dallas Cowboys are the Minnesota Vikings with better marketing and they should be discussed the same. Good team, great defense, decent coach, excellent running back. Questions about
questions
the quarterback.
About
but the quarter,
quarterback.
The quarterback in Minnesota is a lot further along than Dak Prescott.
Okay, sure.
Is.
His cement is dry, so to
yes,
speak.
Yes, yes.
Dak could still evolve.
Up next for the Eagles, though, the New England Patriots. Both teams are on a bye this week. Pats are coming off their first loss of the season against the Ravens. Eagles have won two in a row, and offensive tackle Lane Johnson had something to say on Twitter. Said this, gonna have some fun at the link in 2 weeks. All right, Chris Caney, what's your reaction to Lane's tweet?
I don't like Lane Johnson poking a bear. We know how good Bill Belichick coach teams are coming off of bye
week. Bye week.
Exactly. I don't think that that's the tone that you want to set if you're Lane Johnson. But listen, this is a Philadelphia Eagles team that spent, you know, before the Chicago game, they spent 3 games on the road. So they're finally coming back home. They had a big win against the Bears on Sunday. So I think that this is a team that's trying to figure out, trying to right themselves, trying to find themselves as we move through the middle part of this season. We talked about them not having an identity early on and struggling and then trying to come up with wins and gotta have it situations. But then they had some rough losses, latest being the one to the Dallas Cowboys down in Jerry's world. Now they're starting to try to feel good about themselves, but I don't know if Lane Johnson needs to take this tone with a Bill Belichick coach Patriots team.
Listen, this Eagles team, ever since they beat the Patriots in that Super Bowl, they have created a Patriot-Eagle rivalry that doesn't really exist. If you remember, you had, it was Lane Johnson, right? Saying,
yeah.
I'd rather win one Super Bowl having fun than a bunch of
yeah.
Super Bowls the Patriot way. Lane's come on this show talking about that he believes he's the best right tackle in the entire NFL. Hadn't played like it this year, but we had seen a few years ago he showed that ability. This is in character for Lane Johnson. I don't think it helps him. I don't think it really hurts him. I think one of the reasons the Patriots are great is they are at peak preparation, near peak motivation each and every week. I just think it's a bad look. Like, you're not the big bad bullies anymore. You, while the Patriots are coming off one bad game, you've had half your games this year have been bad games. Even some of your wins, they've been like that Washington game I was talking about, they didn't play great in that football game. The Eagles right now need to be concerned as a team. Why are we, other than Cleveland, the most disappointing team in football this year? Because that's what they are. Like, Cleveland was a team that was supposed to win 9-10 games that's going to be lucky to win 5. Philly's a team that was supposed to contend for the number one seed in the conference. I don't think anyone would have thought going into the year it was outrageous to say Philly would have the best record in the NFC. Right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There are 8 teams in the conference with a better record than them. The Cowboys are good, but not great. They're looking up at the Cowboys all year. So him acting like, oh yeah, we've got the Falcons coming into town. No, you don't. And by the way, when you did play the Falcons, you lost that damn game. The only game the Falcons have won all year long. And
not to mention, they just lost their wide receiver for the season. It's not like they've got an influx of talent coming in where suddenly they're going to be rejuvenated for this Patriots team.
No, it's a fine line between trying to instill confidence in your team and letting your teammates hear you say something like that, as opposed to, you know, having this false sense of who you are as a team. The Eagles have been up and down, inconsistent. I think a large part of that has to do with a lack of leadership in that locker room. And you heard some rumblings that guys that were on that championship team 2 years ago might be satisfied with what they've accomplished. But to Nick's point, the Eagles were one of those teams that we were looking at as title contenders, and they haven't played like it every single Sunday. Now, they still have their entire season out in front of them because they're only a half game out of first place in their division. So they're still within striking distance. They got a date with the Dallas Cowboys. So, I mean, it's a situation where you go ahead.
No,
I don't want to
read too much into it. But I do think there, when people say, Canty, that these guys are still living off the Super Bowl a couple
yeah.
years ago, I don't think you say that if you're not still occasionally glossing your Super Bowl ring.
Yes.
That you're excited to play the Patriots, even though they just lost, who have clearly, and I'm a Patriots skeptic, clearly been better than you in multiple phases of the game this year.
No, you're right, but we did see this Philadelphia Eagles team go up to Buffalo against a pretty good defense and handle them and
yes.
being able to run the ball for 40 times for over 200 yards. What did the Patriots struggle with on Sunday night? struggled with the run game. Sure. They couldn't stop Baltimore Ravens. So the Eagles recognize that they can present that problem to that Patriots defense. And if you can do that, then you'll give yourself a chance to be competitive, and you have to feel good about being at home off of a bye week. So I think that's where this confidence is coming from Lane Johnson. I just don't want to hear about it, because we know what this Patriots team is. We know that they usually respond after a loss, and they usually play well after a bye week. Belichick is 14-5 in his career as a head coach with his team coming off of a bye. So you know they'll be coached up. This is going to be a huge challenge for a Philadelphia Eagles team, and we just don't know what version of the Philadelphia Eagles we're going to see once we get to that game 2 weeks from now.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.